Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't.
Our guest this week grew up in Grosse Pointe Farms, Michigan, and earned a BA in advertising from Michigan State University. In 1983, he joined his family's business, Rinke Automotive Group, the oldest General Motors dealer in Michigan, and from 1988 to 2003, he was the president of Rinke Automotive Group. From 2009 to 2014, he was the owner of Castle & Associates, which operates two traumatic brain injury centers. And in 2022, he was unsuccessful in his run for Michigan governor. His name? Kevin Rinke. And we're honored to have him as our guest. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR. I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Kevin Rinke, formerly president, CEO of Rinke Automotive Group. Kevin, welcome and honored to have you.
Good morning, Jack. How are you?
Thank you. Let's start by talking about your childhood, your mom and your dad, please.
You know, like most people would say, my parents were the greatest. Mm-hmm. They taught me the values that I share today with my wife and my children. They taught me hard work. They taught me faith. And they taught me philanthropy. And I couldn't ask for anything more. My mom's nickname was the General, and my dad was the Enforcer.
All right, Rinke Automotive Group, legendary name. Talk about its history.
Well, we were doing business back in the day, and I date myself. Van Dyke used to be a dirt road into Detroit, and they would run cattle to Eastern Market down Van Dyke Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, is my understanding. And we owned a livery that terminated at a Detroit trolley stop at 10 and a half in Van Dyke. And at that livery, we sold and rented Durant carriages for people who wanted to ride out into the country, pre-automobiles. And my grandfather was very good friends with Bill Durant. And when he transitioned from horse-driven carriages to horseless carriages, he asked if we were interested in becoming automobile dealers. And that's how it all started.
1916.
Yeah.
Okay. Speaking, you were 9 years old when you went to work for Rinke Automotive Group.
At the time, it was Rinke Pontiac in GMC. Like so many children of auto dealers, we got to see my dad on the slow day of the week for work, because at the time, it seemed like he was busy all the time working. And the successful auto dealers were busy all the time working. So one day a week, traditionally Saturdays, I would go in with my father to work, and I would be put in the parts department and pick up nuts and bolts and screws that were laying out on the lot. And my favorite job, I say that tongue-in-cheek, was scrubbing the toilets, the customer toilets, in all of the various bathrooms throughout the dealership. And I was always rewarded with a chocolate milkshake and a cheeseburger from McDonald's and some French fries. So that's how it all started.
All right. Then in 83, you graduate from Michigan State University.
Mm-hmm.
And you joined the family business.
I did. Well, not by design. I actually had worked my senior year for IBM. And I wrote the telemarketing program for the first small business computer that was created by IBM, called the Data Master. And I commuted 5 days a week from East Lansing to Southfield, worked a full day, and then went home back to East Lansing and took my classes and thought I was going to have a career at IBM. They instituted a hiring freeze, and I remember my boss saying, enjoy the next year, and you can start 12 months in one day from today. And not my style. I didn't want to go to Europe and run around. I wanted to go to work, and I needed to make some money. And so my dad was gracious enough to say, between now and then, you can come work at the dealership. And I did. And through various terms of events, ended up staying.
What was that first job he gave you?
Interestingly enough, it was embarrassing to me because my brother, who was older at the time, was a manager in the company, and he assigned me to the used car department to sell used vehicles. And while I had previously sold new vehicles, I had never been in the used car department. And coming out of college, I was a, you know, blue suit, white shirt, rep tie kind of guy, the IBM image, and that's what I wanted to be. And to be put in the used car department was a little less than what I had hoped for. But in actuality, probably one of the best educations I could get in learning that aspect of the auto industry.
Speaking of your older brother,
yeah,
we lost him in an airplane accident.
Yeah. January 10, 1988.
And then soon thereafter, you take over the business from Dad.
Well, you know, the day that we buried my brother, my father and I had a conversation that evening, and needless to say, a traumatic time. I missed the flight that crashed and was there as they extracted the bodies out of the airplane because I got there late to the airport. I was actually out on the field. And talked to my dad because he had been semi-retired or retired. He and mom were living in Florida during the winter months, and asked him what the future was and what his plans were. And for some people, that might be too soon. For us, that responsibility to our employees and to the community really became significant in our time of grief. And he said to me that he thought that he would come back and start working again and look to hire a general manager. And I said, that's fine, Dad. I respect that decision. I'm going to resign from the company, and I will go out and get a job doing something. And he said, why is that? And I said, if in fact you can't put me in the position of running the company, I believe that I could never run the company because the management team would say that I'm not ready. And that night I looked at him and said, if I can get the finances together to buy the business, will you sell me the business and can I hire you as a consultant? And we made an agreement that I had a time frame to get the money together to buy the business and that he would be a consultant. And I did that. And the rest is history.
We're talking to Kevin Rinke. When we come back, we're going to ask him about the culture of Rinke Automotive Group. And I'm Jack Rasul, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Rasul. We're with Kevin Rinke. Kevin, every entity has a culture. What was the culture of Rinke Automotive Group?
Well, from my perspective, we had to build that culture when I took over the company. Understand that I was the youngest car dealer in America at that time. And to say that I was in over my head was an understatement. And for starters, I had to identify really what my value was to the company because I was inexperienced. And so I focused on something that was unique to me. My goal in creating the culture at Rinke Automotive Group, at the time Rinke Pontiac GMC, was to create an environment for all of my employees to be successful in. And we identified what was important to people that worked for us. And they wanted to know where the company was going during this time of, you know, tragedy and upheaval. They wanted to know how we were going to get there, who could they go to for help, what was in it for them, and how they were doing along the way. And we decided that we wanted to be unique. We didn't want to be the traditional auto dealership. We wanted to focus on repeat business. And our company had been successful, but there was opportunity, tremendous opportunity, because car dealers were known at that time for being single transactional places of doing business versus referrals and repeat business and generational business. And we shied away from hiring salespeople in our sales departments, and we looked at people who had the personality dynamics for serving people. And it was unbelievable, the change. In 1988, I believe that the average new car salesperson sold 7 vehicles a month. In 1989, my average salesperson sold 23 new vehicles a month. And it was based on how we approach things. We doubled business the first year. Our service approaches were different. Everybody bought in to our team because they knew what was expected. They weren't micromanaged. And the boss, me, wasn't the smartest guy in the room. I had to rely on them. So they were empowered. And the love and the devotion that they showed to my family and to our customers was astounding. We rallied around each other, and we became one big family at Rinke Automotive Group.
Speaking of what you became, the Pontiac dealership was the biggest in the world, the Cadillac business was number 3 in the nation, and the Toyota franchise was number 3 in Michigan.
Yep.
Successful.
Yep.
All right. Speaking of love and devotion, auto dealers, they have huge hearts, Kevin, for their communities.
Mm-hmm.
They're extremely giving. Why so?
Well, when we talked about mom and dad and the values that they taught, I was a little leaguer for football and baseball at the time. And I learned from my father. He sponsored the uniforms. He sponsored jackets. He bought bats and balls so other kids who didn't have them could participate and play. And that was a great, great experience to watch your dad participate, not for you, but for others. And I think that's consistent with the auto dealers across Michigan. I don't know about other places, but I assume that they're similar. The community is your base of business. And the relationships that you have at every level of the community are key to long-term success. And Michigan's been blessed with some fabulous auto dealers over the years, icons of the industry from a retailing perspective. And my father was one of those. And he participated in the community at every single level. And that included giving a helping hand to someone who needed one in times, for whatever reason, as well as on the public levels, you know, baseball leagues or in the political systems. And it was all great.
Speaking of keys to success, I've always admired the service managers in each dealership. I come in there because of a recall, something doesn't work, I'm not happy. Talk about the job that these service managers do day in and day out.
It's a tough job, and it's a job that personally I did for a period of time and don't understand why anybody would want to do it other than the end result. Because people come in, an automobile is critical for their day, get the kids to school, allow their wife to shop, get them to work, to go to their in-laws, to go to their parents' homes, whatever it may be.
To go to another Lions victory.
Okay. To go to another Lions victory, or maybe even a Red Wing victory. And when that car doesn't work, it's bad juju. I mean, it just ruins every level of the family's day, and in some instances, many days, depending on the degree of repair required. So they show up at the dealership, they're angry, they're frustrated. Their second largest investment that they're probably ever going to make in their lifetime is not providing the service that they want, and you've got to help them. And those guys were great in our dealerships. Perfect? Nope. But to listen, to care enough, to follow up, to do the best you can for some things that are outside of your control is a unique personality dynamic. And again, it's that service desire. You know, some people are, they just naturally take care of people. And people feel that and they see it and they gravitate to it.
All right. How do you explain, Kevin, America's love affair with their automobiles, their trucks, their SUVs?
For those people that have never been out of America, it's really difficult to explain. But when people come to America, what's so interesting is they adopt it almost immediately. And that love affair is this: freedom. The ability to go when you decide, when you want, with people whom you want, to travel in a fashion that you control all the variables. Nobody likes to say, I'm going to get on a commercial airplane. And I say all the time that if everybody could afford a private airplane, they would, because the luxury of making your own decisions is so powerful. I used to say it all the time. Everybody would drive a Mercedes-Benz if they could, because the persona and the power that that individual has when they can control not only where they go, when they go, but how they get there is intoxicating. And in Detroit, we're the Motor City. We are the Motor City not just of Michigan. We're the Motor City of the world. The engineering and the technology are unique, but there was Mercedes in Europe, and there was BMW, and there was Volkswagen and Fiat and a whole bunch of other auto manufacturers. But what was unique was the expanse that Henry Ford created when he went to the $5 workday, not because he wanted to pay his workers $5 a day at the time, or an hour, whatever it was, but he knew that if they had enough money, that they would buy automobiles. And that was the impetus. That was the love affair that started, that's so unique to Detroit. Our citizens want a new car as often as they can get one, as often as they can afford one.
We're talking to Kevin Rinke, a quintessential entrepreneur. And when we come back, we're going to ask him about entrepreneurs. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Rasula, with Kevin Rinke. Kevin, entrepreneurs. We love them. Talk about entrepreneurs.
I think the spirit of entrepreneurship is a personality dynamic that I don't know where it comes from. I know this, that when I was a kid, I wanted to own my own business. Didn't know what it was. Admired and had heroes that I wanted to emulate. When I was a kid, I looked at it challenges differently than some of my friends. There was a phrase, outside the box thinker, because like your show, anything is possible. In my heart of hearts, I believed that anything was possible. I could be the president of the United States if that's what I wanted to work towards. I could go to the moon if that's what I wanted to work towards. I could be the next John Wayne if that's what I wanted to work towards. Or I could be the best landscaper, architect, you name it. And I think that having dreams, I think that having the thought that no matter what your circumstances in life, if you focus on your definition of better in America, in Michigan, you can achieve that. Won't be easy. You know, plenty of hiccups and failures along the way, but heck, I have my first paying job other than cheeseburgers and milkshakes. I think I was 9 years old. I went out with the kid down the street, a guy by the name of Michael Rutan, and we started cutting people's grass using push mowers. And we started shoveling driveways back in the days when Michigan had lots of snow. And we instantly thought, how do we build our business? So we went from Mike and I cutting lawns to getting three other friends, and we added lawns. When it came to driveways, shoveling snow was tough. We took the money that we earned from shoveling snow, and we bought snow blowers, and we added driveways. And it was just that spirit. And that has been a part of me my whole life. And no different than Elon Musk, I guess, wanting to go to Mars. He's got a vision. He's got a target. And he is trying to do the things necessary to achieve that. And anyone can do that.
We're talking to Kevin Rinke, and in 2003, he sold Rinke Automotive Group to the Penske Group.
Mm-hmm.
All right, 2009, you bought Castle & Associates.
Mm-hmm.
How did that come to be?
Funny story, Castle, actually, & Associates was a post-acute traumatic brain injury business, and a friend of mine was representing the owner and her trying to sell her business. Her husband had died, and they had operated this together. And he appeared to be struggling to attract the types of owners that would perpetuate the business in a pretty competitive marketplace. And so he asked me to come in and take a look. And I did. And my first reaction to that business was one of fear, almost revulsion. I'd never seen so much pain in my life because the business had people who had been traumatically brain injured. So some could walk, some were in wheelchairs, some had assisted walkers and things. Many of them couldn't talk, many of their hands were atrophied. The pain and suffering was overwhelming to me, Jack. And my initial thought was that I wanted to get out of the business. I wasn't going to be able to help my buddy. And I thought I was going to pass out. So I went to the washroom to run some cold water on my wrists. And I'm standing there doing that and starting to feel better. And a gentleman in a wheelchair wheels in, severely disabled. His name was Michael. And he's looking at me. I'm looking at him in the mirror. And he says to me, are you thinking about working here? And I paused and turned and looked at him and I said, yeah, I am thinking about it. Tell me why. And he said, this place saved my life. This is the greatest place in the world. And I said, tell me more. He said, well, look at me. He goes, do you think I want to be like this? Do you think it's easy to be in a wheelchair and as damaged as I am? This people gave me a new perspective, a new opportunity, and it gave me a reason to live. And I got goosebumps. Every now and then I do things impulsively because I didn't know anything about traumatic brain injuries. I walked out of the bathroom and I bought the business and started learning and was just a new phase in my life, maybe one of the most rewarding phases in my life other than having children and getting to experience that miracle as well. But we had miracles at Castle & Associates every day with people.
You may not have known anything about the business, but in 5 years, you built it to the largest in Michigan.
Yeah, the largest in the Midwest, actually. Mm-hmm. And It was a fascinating five-year period of time. It was working with, obviously, people who were challenged every day and who appreciated a result every day, as small as it could be. But very few people in their lifetimes have an opportunity to go to work and have goosebumps and see miracles. Because at Castle and Associates, we had people who hadn't walked because of their injury and yours literally stand up and walk out of a wheelchair and say, I'm tired of sitting. People who hadn't talked in years because of the care and the protocol that we provided and the approach, that said, I've got a few things to say out of the blue. And again, you know, the interaction with the families, to give those families with their loved ones hope again, the realization that life is really important and everyone can contribute, was astounding to me.
Speaking, Kevin, of out of the blue, when we come back, we're going to ask you, in early 2022, you go to your wife, Janine, and say, honey, I want to run for governor. When we come back, we're going to talk about that. And I'm Jack Pasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR.
You've been listening to your inspirational fireside chat, Anything Is Possible, for nearly 20 years.
This is Anything Is Possible, and I'm Jack Crisula.
But what has Jack been up to lately? Search at AIP Speaker Series and find out. Jack has interviewed thousands of historical voices, some of whom have offered him their philosophy of life, like Tom Izzo.
And Tom writes, work hard, persistence always wins out, discipline is the highest form of love. Stay humble.
The great Ernie Harwell.
My aim is to do justice, love mercy, and walk humbly with God.
And the voices of our generation.
I am reassured continuously that His unfathomable love and mercy are the greatest gifts of my life and my constant source of strength, reassurance, and guidance. His Holiness, Pope Francis.
At AIP Speakers Series is the YouTube channel where all of these jewels can be heard, including some of Anything Is Possible's greatest guests.
And we're with Mitch Albom.
The Little Liar is really a book about truth and lies and the price we pay when we lie.
This is Anything Is Possible, and with Tom Watson.
My father loved to play with the pros at the club. Developed a very quick friendship with Stan and played some golf with him. And then he would ask me to play golf with him and Stan.
Our guest this week was born with a rare disorder characterized by the absence of arms and legs. His name, Nick Vujicic.
Something that every human being actually deals with, Jack. It's the choice of continuing to believe or giving up.
And recordings of the AIP Speaker Series events at St. John's Resort. Go to YouTube and search at AIP Speaker Series. It's free. And remember,
anything.
Spohom. I'm Jack Pasula. This is Anything Is Possible. We're talking to Kevin Rinke. Early 2022. You go home. Janine, honey, I want to run for governor. Why and what did Janine say?
Well, for starters, she said that I was nuts, and, you know, really,
not the first time.
Not the first time, and she may be right. I didn't want to run for governor, but my approach and my decision-making was I was looking at a conservative slate, the Republican Party's candidates who had announced at that time, and Gretchen Whitmer was going to be really tough to beat. Not impossible, but tough to beat. And I thought that it would take a unique personality, someone outside of the political field that had tremendous business experience, similar to a Trump, an outsider. And I met with most of the candidates, talked to all of the candidates that had announced. And they were great people, but they didn't have the business acumen, and they didn't have the political experience that had been afforded to me through being a part of the Detroit Auto Dealers Association, the Michigan Auto Dealers Association, and then the Brain Injury Association of Michigan. So I had spent a tremendous amount of time in Lansing. I knew people and knew how Lansing functioned. And I thought that was unique of the candidates who had announced at that time. Detroit, in particular, was the third largest city in America, and it was the fourth most affluent city in America at the time. The people of Michigan should demand, you know, when we talk about Detroit's resurgence, certainly it's improved. We have so far to go. We haven't gotten back to zero. I went from a 15-point lead in the primary the day before Trump endorsed Tudor Dixon to an 11-point deficit 2 days later. And that cost me because I believe that Gretchen Whitmer would have had her hands full with Kevin Reinke on real issues that would be changing Michigan's culture and getting us back to one of the top cities in America.
Speaking of real issues, you've been huge on the education crisis.
Mm-hmm.
50% of kids in America cannot read at grade level.
Yeah.
Kevin.
Well, if you can't read, you can't do anything. And I'm one of those people that say, I'm not willing to accept any excuse. The ability to read has nothing to do with your race, has nothing to do with your income level. It has to do with a commitment to a result. And for me, in America, the greatest country in the world, how we can have 50% of our people not be able to read is shameful. And so I think that Michigan needs to improve. I actually think that the number that can't read Jack is greater than 50%, but I think you know people that know more than me on that subject. But my target for literacy at every grade level would be 94% or above. And I use that 6% cushion because there are a small, very small percentage of people who have unique challenges that might not allow them to read at grade level efficiency, but certainly they could improve from where they're at.
All right. Let's talk about the three or four biggest things that you believe we have to transform in this state to make it top five. One, change our entire tax policy.
Yeah, I think that Michigan micromanages its people, and it's not been successful. When we implemented the personal income tax, which I ran to completely eliminate, every year that the personal income tax has been assessed in Michigan, the state's population has declined, and the number dollar of tax revenues has gone negative every single year. Just like the Department of Education at the federal level, every single year since it's been implemented, our educational scores have gone down. Bureaucracies choke people's freedoms. And in America, in Michigan, the more responsibility we give to citizens, the better we prepare them, the better the results will be. So we elect people who aren't qualified, who say it makes sense, we're going to charge taxes because that's what government does, and we're going to fix the problems for the people. Well, that complexity strangles out the solution, which is the people. If people are educated, if they have a good paying job, if they have opportunity, they'll take care of the things around them. They'll take care of others. And so we need a different tax policy. We need a different educational approach. We need to create opportunities that are vocational in nature because huge demand in vocational jobs, plumbers, electricians, painters, people that do drywall, critical aspects. When we look at the potential for big businesses to relocate in Michigan, and we look at the work base, we struggle. We don't have the educational levels necessary to operate modern technology, so that's a check against us. We have an aging population instead of a young, vibrant population. That's a check against us. The land and how we have taxed that land prevents people from entering because government says, well, you've got to pay the back taxes. You've got to do this. You've got to take care of other people's failures before we'll allow you an opportunity to make a difference. It's backwards, Jack. We need to fix it. Otherwise, Michigan is going to continue on the trend that we're on.
All right. Personal income tax.
Yeah.
4.25%.
Yep.
We get about 30% of our total revenue in Michigan from that personal income tax, about $12 billion a year. If you take that away, Kevin, how do we get $12 billion somewhere else?
Well, right now it's not 30%, Jack. It's much less than that because under Gretchen Whitmer, we've grown the state budget from $44 billion to almost $100 billion. So the personal income tax continues to be about $12 billion a year because our working tax-paying citizens continues to get smaller. So how do you replace it? When you give people more money, what are they going to do? They're going to spend that money on things that they need for themselves. And what that means is they're going to spend it on housing. Well, if they improve their house, the tax rate goes up and they'll pay a property tax. If they spend it, you have sales tax collections. If they participate in the community, there's taxable collections. It's having a tax package that is proactive versus reactive. And right now, Michigan struggled with a very reactive property tax approach and personal income tax approach.
Nine states in America have no personal income tax, and they're all thriving.
Yeah.
Kevin Rinke, thank you.
Thank you.
Please join us next week. Until then, I'm Jack Rasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spahom.
Believe in yourself.